Thank you, Leslie. And I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, Joe from La Mesa. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. All right, I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank the South Bay Pioneers Group for inviting me tonight and feeding me. And I like to thank my lovely lady that accompanied me here tonight as well. We were so here's the day. Today's day being sober. You know my well. I'll give you some facts. So my sobriety date is February 2nd, 2000. That's the second most important thing for me in my sobriety. The first most important thing in my sobriety is you people. And if it wasn't for you people, I wouldn't have a sobriety date. I tried me, myself, and I to get this thing. I tried me, myself, and I to figure this out. And it just put me and propelled me a more combative nature to the loved ones and everybody around me. And so it was for you people to welcome me into Alcoholics Anonymous, show me the principles of this program, and that it instituted change. I'm not the man I was. And there was a sign. So I got sober in a place similar to this. It was on the west side of Cleveland. And the guy kind of looks like this guy in the photo. And then his second in command was Phyllis, a young woman, you know, a smaller woman as well. And it was called the Freedom House. And they opened up this place similar to this with a kitchen. And they called it The Rock. And what they did is it was just members of Alcoholics Anonymous that took in drunks off the streets and out of prison and just introduced them to AA. They weren't state-funded. They didn't have anything affiliated. It was just these old-time members of AA that got sober in the 40s and 50s, and this was their avocation and their work. And I'm grateful, you know. So, like, you know, I got it's you know, they would have a sign, and it said, "The man I was will always drink." And it was pretty, it was just a men's facility. And then they actually opened up a woman's facility a little later on. And there was that separation, right? Like when I came into AA, there was a separation of men with men, women with women. And back then, so I could say now, like, I'm not the man I was a day before I got sober. I'm not the man I was when I was a drunk. And that's what this program is about, change, you know. So, like, I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I was born in Cleveland. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. And my first 14 years in sobriety were there, and then I moved to San Diego. And this is my home now. And my next 11 years were here in San Diego, and my AA started at Drunks Only when I got here. And Drunks Only, that was in Linda Vista at the rec center. I was living there, and so my ex, she was working with Channel 10, so she already had a job lined up, so I had time while I'm looking for work. And the first and foremost thing when I moved here was, where are the meetings? Where are my people? Where's Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm sober 14 years, good foundation. I go to a different place, different location, and the first thing is not, I got to get on the job interviews. I got to do this. It's where's the AA meeting, and that was Drunks Only. And then, you know, and as a result, right, I propelled myself first and foremost for my sobriety. Everything else follows suit, you know. And it's great. If this was, so look, if you're new in AA, the one thing I can say, this is a fact, Alcoholics Anonymous works, and it's proof right here. Okay, like there's nothing really that impressive about my drinking. I mean, I started young. I was an everyday drinker at 13 years old. I grew up in a household where it was available readily for, you know, my sticky fingers could get my hands on things, you know, really readily. And so it was easy, you know, and I had a stepfather who invites me to a show, you know, let's go to the Grateful Dead show. When I'm 14 years old. So I'm being introduced to, you know, just that environment, you know, at a young age. as a teenager, I was introduced to like that activity, you know, like environments that had adult activity happening. And so, you know, my parents divorced when I was 3. I have 2 older sisters and my mother was a single working mother, right? So I grew up with a single mother, 2 older sisters, and we had a neighborhood that was like a village. Like the neighborhood I grew up with, all the neighbors knew each other. You know, if nobody was home and I got home from school, neighbors were around. People were around. I'm going to cross the street and play with kids, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for having that involvement because as a kid, if I didn't have that involvement at the house, I got it from the neighborhood, you know, and people were showing me attention there. And that's not why I'm a drunk, you know, because people grow up in completely opposite environments and they end up drunk. So why I'm a drunk is when that effect produced by alcohol hit me and I fell in love and I had this love affair with this elixir of life that just gave me everything I needed, made me feel good, made me feel like not restless, irritable, discontented, and I felt at ease and I fell in love with that effect. So at that point, the obsession immediately says, when, where, and how am I going to get this? That's the first and foremost important thing, you know, on this kid's mind was when, where, and how is the party? Where's it at? And, you know, school, secondary, this, whatever. And I was able to, they'd say, you know, like drunks, we're like 3-inning ball players. At least, like, this is what I would hear, right? We're like 3-inning ball players. Like we're good, you know, for the first 3 innings, and then we check out, right? And so, like, you know, I mean, my mother, God bless her, she was full-blown Al-Anon, never went to an Al-Anon meeting. She just knew. She just knew she had to give me tough love, right? So I'm 14. I come home from high school. It's 3 in the afternoon watching TV. And she's like, well, what are you doing? I said, well, school's out. You know, I'm hanging out. I'm going to watch TV, kick back, you know, and wait for buddies to probably go later and cop beer. And she's like, oh, really? Well, if you're not, like, doing anything, like, after hours for school, sports or anything, like, you got to go, like, you got to get a job. Like, I'm not going to have my kid, like, just sitting here, like, loafing, doing nothing. And so, like, go to the Stop and Shop and get a job. Go talk to Chuck. Everybody knew each other, like, everywhere. Like, Chuck, he was the manager at the Stop and Shop, you know. It was before cell phone use and internet. So, like, that's how you know, like, communities were a little more involved, I think. But so I go, I talk. Sure, no problem. You know, I was 14. I started working at a grocery store. And she's like, and I'm not going to have a dropout for a son. Like, I don't want my son to be a dropout. So, like, those were the 2 things that kept me under her radar, right? For as long as I'm, like, working hard and I'm on my way to graduate, like, I was able to save a lot of, like, you know, finger pointer that I have a problem. And then, so, you know, nothing impressive. Like I would tell myself, oh, my drinking was great. I had great times. And then it dawned on me being sober sometime that, you know, like, it's a delusion. Like, my great times drinking was when everything was going Joe's way. You know, when the night's perfect, when I'm with the right people, I got the right amount of stuff, everything. When everything's going my way, I'm having a good time. And always somehow, like, my drinking was always at the expense and cost of somebody else's care and worry and concern, you know? So I have to remind myself that, you know, I was an everyday bar drinker as a junior and senior in high school. And, like, who does that, right? This drunk does it, and this drunk thought it was normal. And this drunk thought it was impressive, you know, against my peers that I was doing it. And I realized, I look back, like, man, it's sad, you know? Like, I look back that, like, for me, like, I missed out completely on, like, a true high school experience. because I wanted to hang out with the big older kids and go hit the town and go out. And, you know, it is what it is. And so, you know, as a result of drinking, you know, starting early and drinking as hard as I did, eventually it's going to catch up to you and it's going to be problematic. And, like, I didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous just getting a job promotion. I didn't think this was a great decision in my life because I was, like, really healthy at 25 years old and everything was going great. And my loved ones were like, oh, yeah, you're doing so good. Hey, go to an AA meeting, you know, on top of all that. And, you know, so it got, you know, being young, like starting, I realize now, like starting young, I propelled quick down because I drank for effect, right? So whenever Joe's restless, irritable, discontent, fearful, angry, I'm drinking and it seems to go away, but it's not solving anything. It's just masking for that time being, right? And then I sober up and then I need more. And then I can't face, you know, everything that built me up to take the drink anyway. So I have this fear and resentment balloon that's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then eventually that balloon gets so big where I'm masking and I'm drinking and it's getting bigger and whatever, and it pops. Whatever resentment I have is extreme rage. Whatever fear I have is extreme paranoia. And that's alcoholic insanity for me. And that happened at 20 years old. So I took from 18, you know, I don't have any plans to go to college. So, you know, my big decision is to go work with my friends, starting businesses and just going around. And I have all the intentions to be successful, to go travel the world. And so, like, from 18 to 20, my intentions was to make it, to prove them, you know, to show them. And I have 20 geographical cures within a 5-mile radius of Cleveland. And, you know, they talk about geographical cures, right? There's people, like, I heard somebody, she's like, yeah, and I had a geographical cure, and I went to Spain for, like, 2 years. I'm like, what? Like, I had to go, like, you know, like, 3 blocks, you know? Like, that was my big geographical cure. And like, living basically, like, it wasn't me, like, signing rent agreements either. Like, these geographical cures was like, hey, John, do you got an extra room? Yeah, give us $250 a month. You know, I lived in the kindness of others. Like being a drunk, like, it was... You know, like, if I had to live in the kindness of others, being a grown man, you know, and just having people, you know, just take me, push me, you know, provide for me when I was unable to provide for myself. So 20 years old, you know, after that 2 years of running, me, myself, and I, drinking is getting worse. At 20, this happens where I'm just, like, insane and things aren't well. I can't make rent. I'm looking at, you know, not having a place to stay. And so the only thing is, all right, I'll call my mom. I'll call my mom, the person who brought me in this world. And so I call and she's like, hey, how's it going? And I said, not too good. And she goes, oh, really? Now, she's heard already, you know, all the rumors around town about what my behavior's been. And so it's no surprise. So she goes, okay, so we think that you've been having a drinking problem. You need to address that and get help for it. So I'll talk with your father. We can see if there's a place available. And then I'm like, okay. And that's like the first time I actually was willing to accept like another like help. Like it was a small percent. But so she calls, she says, hey, we found a place, doesn't take insurance. It's called the Freedom House. You got to go down for an interview. And so I'm an East Sider, right? Well, so I like grew up on the East Side of Cleveland. This was on the West Side. So I'm thinking this is like ironic, you know? And so I go over and Jack, heavily Irish population too over there, you know? And so I go over, Jack, old time member of Alcoholics Anonymous, sits me down. He says, okay, this is the deal. Come and like, if you mess up, you pack your stuff. And so I'm like, all right, I didn't really have, you know, I wasn't in a position that I could be like, okay, Jack, yeah, you know, let me think about it overnight and get back to you. Let me, and it was like, either it's like I'm taking this or I'm going to be living on the streets. Or if somebody, you know, bails me out. And so I went to the Freedom House, and this was, it's exactly like how this place is run, you know what I mean? Which is great. They had groups. They had you had a service commitment like with your house chore, and it was in a house. So I was in a house. My first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous was through the Freedom House, and I was in a house that had like 25 other guys, right, who were either off the street or out of prison, and I'm like, this is bogus. And, like, for me, I'm like, this sucks. Like, I don't want to have, like, if this is AA, like, I don't want anything part of it, right? But, like, what was my option? I didn't have any. So I was there. And what I didn't know, so, like, if you're a drunk, if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome. And if you're a drunk like me, you're going to walk in and be like, this is bogus. At least it was for me. Like, this was a bogus deal, like, when I'm new. I don't want to have nothing to do with you people. You know, you're doing stuff different. This isn't, and it's eventually when all that, like, thinking that I know what's going on runs dry, is that, you know, when I was able to accept, you know, help. But so I was there. I was doing the deal. In the back of my head, I was like, nah. Like, I know, like, I'll just manage better, right? I'm 20 years old. Thanks for everything you showed me, but I'm going to manage better. Now I'm a real alcoholic. Real alcoholics don't manage better. It just gets worse. And it could be like a whole 5-novel series of how it got worse, you know? But like I had a road dog for like 3 years. You know, I drank in the bars, right? Junior, senior. Well, I had a road dog. Like, we were inseparable for like 4 years, right? He's never been to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. For some reason, yeah, he could be a heavy drinker. But for some reason, man, he never crossed that line into this just pure, like, crazy obsession of it. Like, he always knew maybe, like, when enough was enough and, like, just to be able to manage his affairs. And So I do that. So I go. So I learn about alcoholism in the Freedom House, and I get out, and I say, okay, I'll manage better, and it got worse, right? So from 20 years old to 25, I had a series of 5 years that I was trying to get sober, getting pushed into getting help. And, like, it all led me to a point where I was in, so my detox at Jackson House, welcome. I actually have a sponsee that's 3 years sober that I met in the Jackson House because I did a panel there. And he did the footwork to, like, come get my number and actually called me and, like, hooked up with him. And he's sober 3 years now. So I was there, yeah. And, so my treatment center, it turned out to be like psychiatric hospitals. When I needed to detox, it was like, okay, well, so here's how, you know, I go to the Freedom House treatment, and so it gets worse, my drinking, and then people are like, okay, you got a problem. So we have a family friend who says, is going social work. She says, hey, Joe, do you want to do a 72-hour psych evaluation? And I'm like, sure, let's do it. And so they dropped me off at CPI, which was Cleveland Psychiatric Institute, which is like the Arkham Asylum if I'm in Gotham City, right? And so this was my introduction to, like, you know, this psychiatric evaluation. And so the thing is luckily, when I'm actively drinking, I'm not normal. But over a period of time that I could sober up, I could come back down and become sane, right? And so that's kind of what happened along those lines, right? I come in right off good drunk, binge, and I'm crazy. You know, I'm proving to them this. I'm talking all the... opposite of what I should or what they're asking. And then, but a couple periods of days, you know, pass by, and I'm coming back. And part of the reason is after the 72 hours, I'm going to the nurse's station like, hey, like it's time. Like my 3 days is up. Like I got to go. And she's like, well, where are you going? I'm like, I don't know out of here. She goes, well, the doctors don't seem fit that you're ready to leave yet. And so just put it into perspective, right? That like that I was like voluntarily put myself in a situation that, you know, might be permanent or, you know, might not, or I better put some work in, you know. And so I'm, you know, back and forth, right, that. And I'll just share a couple stories and I'll get into my sobriety, because that's like, for me, that's the best part of my story is like, you know, when I fully arrived to you people, right? And so like I go to the psych ward again and it never was my intention, and I'm walking down the hallway and then all of a sudden Advanced Grace hit me, and it was like, hey Joe, maybe you're all wrong, pal. Like maybe what people been telling you the last 5 years, maybe they're all right and you're the one wrong. And that was Advanced Grace from something greater than myself, just kind of, hey. And what happened was I was able to fully be honest with myself, right? I had this period of being honest to say, you know, it could be right here. It could be my fault. And then that honesty gave me the open mind and the willingness, open mind to actually listen to what people were telling me, and the willingness to do was everything against my nature. So if you tell me to, you know, if you tell me to turn right, go this way, I'm like instinctively going to want to turn left. I'm just going to want to spite you, you know, out of pride, ego, whatever it is. And so I knew at that point, okay, I'll give Alcoholics Anonymous 1 year of my life. Now, prior to that, I know what it feels like to be 99.9% hopeless, okay? And that feeling comes from the pit of the stomach. I don't know if you ever felt that it's kind of near and around and under your belly button, and I'm sitting on the corner, have nowhere to go, and I'm thinking, like, you know, this is just it. Like, I'm done. Like, this is it. Like, there's no help. And I'm sitting on this corner. Everybody's going to work. It's probably like 8:30 in the morning. And it's just ticking. And I'm sitting and it's just feeling. And I'm feeling like 99.1, 99.2, 99.3. And I'm feeling this hopelessness. And it's just growing. And like, and I really feel like if it would have reached 100% hopeless, I would be not standing here. What happened was, the craziest thing is I'm feeling all alone and hopeless in that moment with life around me. And all of a sudden a bird comes, a little bird flew right by my feet. And we're talking about, I'm downtown, I'm in a city, there's traffic everywhere. And then another bird came, and three. So three little birds came and started chirping. And then it just made me think, like, man, are you serious? Like it just kind of opened up this whole, like to me it was like the spirit came down or something and was like, hey, buddy, like, it's okay, man. Like, all these cars are around or whatever, but look, we're just flying around, dude. We're here, we're chirping. And it got me, and that right there, like allowed me to feel like, maybe there's something more to this than just whatever's going on with me, you know. And I got up and I walked to the old place I was staying. That's when I asked for help. That arrived me to that moment where I put the blame here. And I said, I'll give AA 1 year of my life. So the place, the Freedom House, or similar to South Bay Pioneers, that I hated and despised and was on my four-step inventory eventually, like, they planted a mustard seed. And the mustard seed was, hey, like when the clown finishes the act, this is what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I said, I'll give myself 1 year. And I immersed. I said, I'll go to a meeting every day. When I got sober, they're like 90 and 90. So if you're new in AA, they'd be like, are you new? Oh, what's, yeah, 2 days. Okay, do 90 and 90. You know, show me you could do 90 meetings in 90 days. That was a thing then. And then, and I did. I just found, you know, like I just found the neighborhood, the meetings close to the neighborhood that I grew up in. I found those meetings. And it's not like I walk into a meeting and I knew everybody anyways. Like, there's actually a lot of people I didn't. They're all new faces, right? And you people welcome me. And I was angry. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm mad at the world. I'm pissed off. Woe is me. And like, everybody everywhere else is, you know, tired and sick of seeing me come in. And AA welcomes me. You know, and I'm grateful for that for this day. So I come to meetings and I would hear things like, if you're new, get to meetings early, set up, shake hands, get involved. And because I wasn't able to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous was when I was brand new. Like I couldn't, to me, I thought like you people dilly-lally with a drinking problem. Come in here and then your life gets good. You know, for me, I come in here just heated. You don't know. And it just took time. I just showed up. So the most important thing for me was to show up, be consistent. I had a buddy who started a business. He said, Joe, like, I want you to work for me. Can you work? And I said, not now. I said, you know what, man, I got to take this like sobriety and recovery serious. I gave it 1 year, dude. Look, let me do this for a year. And then if everything after a year, you know, you still got the business, you still need me, like I'll work for you. And that's what happened, actually. But what it was is I knew for me is like in the trade that I was in, a lot of people were working hard and playing hard. And like I needed to relieve myself from people, places, and things that would have been tempting, and like the drink was around, and I needed to, you know, and so I decided to not, you know, to immerse myself into being around you people regularly. And what happened was I was going to a meeting every day, and even though I didn't want to go, I was going to a meeting every day. I was bringing the body, and as a result, showing up speaks volumes, you know? And what I learned was, even though I didn't want to go to a meeting, it was bogus, and I got this dude up in a suit talking and whatever about this and that, you know, like, the truth is that I was in a room full of about 100 people who were happy, recovered from alcoholism, a hopeless state of mind and body, or I would have been in my room, what, just pacing. So, like, you know, when I stop drinking, I have a thinking problem. So, you know, and it didn't, you know, and this, it took a long time. It took me like 2 years sober to wake up one morning and be like, wow, I think I just like slept a full night, you know? And you know, because I would go to a meeting, you know, and just really active mind and just sometimes just lay there and then drift off. But, you know. So, you know, I mean, everything that I learned from Alcoholics Anonymous was shown to me by other members of Alcoholics Anonymous and giants in the program. I mean, there's these guys who dedicated their time to show sick, belligerent, drunks like me, and they knew. So the cool people in AA weren't coming up approaching me. They weren't hanging out with me. They didn't want to have nothing to do with me. But I get this old-timer that would be like, what are you doing, man? Sit up. You know what I mean? Like, take that hat or whatever. You know, like, they would just have their way of getting under your skin. You know, whatever it was. It doesn't matter if you were wearing a jacket, not wearing a jacket. If you're wearing a jacket, take it off. If you're not wearing a jacket, put it on. Like, they're just trying to get at you. What are you going to do, drink at me? Like, that's what they're trying to, right? They're going to say. And so, you know, these guys, they got, so my one Friday meeting I'd go to, I sat next to this guy, got sober in 56. And the funny thing is he would go like this. Every once in a while, he'd nudge me and be like, Joe, when did people start holding hands in AA? And I'd be like, I don't know, Joe, they were holding them when I got here. But, like, I mean, to him, like, he came into AA when, like, they weren't holding hands. I mean, they were just standing up and whatever. And so, like, and then he just has this moment of, like, yeah, what's, you know. But it's just, you know, these guys would go to Rosary Hall, right? They're that generation was like, you bring a drunk to detox for 72 hours, and then these guys would go to the family member's house, and they'd knock on the door, and they'd make sure that the electric bill, the bills were paid, they got electricity, they got food in the cupboards, and the kids are taken care of. Like, that's how, you know, because they knew, you know, that it's going to be a little time for pops over there at detox. And, you know, much like here too in San Diego, you know, there's guys in that book too, right, that have done serious work, intensive work with drunks. And that's why I'm here. You know, these guys, right, they were showing me attention. Like, where people, I'm the type of person that's like, people are like, oh, you know, these old timers were like grabbing me and like, you know, and what they were doing was they were teaching me. They were teaching me. I didn't know. They were pissing me off at first, right, a lot of the times. But they were teaching me as a result. And it was like one night, this guy made me so mad that I'm like gripping the steering wheel, you know, and I'm like plotting revenge on this dude. And I'm like, you know, whatever's going to happen, like next time I see him, like I'm going to give him my, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden the thought crossed my head, hey, Joe, you know this guy you're like burned up about right now? Like, he's probably sleeping like a baby. And that taught me something. And so, like, my higher power has a way of just kind of, like, you know, just making me think a little something different than what I feel is right. And so what that taught me was, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? And so, like, so I learned, you know, like, I had to act my way into good thinking. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that. It's impossible for my mind to try to think my way into good thinking. And I believe, like, the way this program is designed, you could get the greatest scientific minds and they could read that book, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they will not have a spiritual experience sufficient to bring upon recovery. And you could have the best, you know. So what that tells me is, like, there's a lot of action involved in cultivating the principles of AA into your life to create that change, to create that spiritual experience. And that's what the old timers did. That's what people did. Pick up the chairs. Why? Like, I got some serious problems in my life right now. Yeah, like, just pick up the chairs. We'll talk about that after. And so, like, I'm throwing chairs around. I'm setting up. So they say, you know, if you want what we have, you get active. Get the meetings early set up. Now, I wasn't working, so I said, okay, I'll do that. So I remember the first meeting I go to get active, and the coffee guy, so it's a meeting starts, the beginner starts at 7, and then the speaker starts at 8, right? So people get there 5:30, 6, start setting it up, making coffee. So coffee guy gets there. I run up to him. Hey, I'm new. Like, I heard they set up the meeting. He's like, all right, I'll go start the coffee here. Just move the chairs around in this formation, this circle or whatever. Okay. So then he's walking to the kitchen. I say, hey, hold on. I said, where's everybody else? I was like, why am I, you know, like, why am I the only one that's going to set this meeting up for you people who are happy? And like, and I'm the one that has to do this. He's like, well, you got here early. They're on their way. And so now I'm thinking like, oh, I get it. Like, I'm a sucker boy now. Like, that's it. Like that's how they tart, you know, like, yeah, come and then you're going to do all. So I'm not knowing why. So I'm like mad. And then, you know, set it up, go smoke. Whoever comes next, I'm complaining to them about just what happened. And that's how I went for like the first 6 months, right? Every meeting I went to. And what I learned was that there was a time that I set up a meeting and I'm out smoking, and all of a sudden I had this thought cross my mind that when I was setting up the meeting, I wasn't thinking about nothing. I was just doing. And that was the first moment where like I had this period, this moment of like, wow. Like while I was like doing something, like I wasn't like in this stinky thinking. And so for me, what I learned is it was for me, it's my own universe's mathematical equation that in order for me to receive from Alcoholics Anonymous, I needed to learn to give and contribute to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was only until when I learned to give to AA that I actually started to receive anything from this program. Because I was in AA before and I wasn't doing nothing. I was thinking I was going to get sober by osmosis, you know, sitting in the back of a room. I was thinking, you know, and it didn't work that way. So I had to physically be a part of, and it made me feel like I was a part of this thing. You know, I was so separated, right? Like I had this terminal uniqueness. I come into a meeting of A, even though I'm a real drunk, I'm different. I'm not like you people. And by me getting involved helped me to feel like, wow, I'm starting to be a part of this. And then you start hearing the stories of other members that are like, wow, that was like worse than me. And there was a woman, there was a young gal, and she saved my life in a sense where, you know, she was sober about over a year. She was working with a new girl, you know, in the book, at the meeting. And I set up, and she's like, how's it going, Joe? And I'm 6 months sober, and I say, not good. I say, like, I'm doing all this work. I set up all these meetings for you people. And, like, I'm miserable, and I want to kill myself. She goes, oh, yeah, like, 7.5 months sober, I attempted suicide. I'm like, what? You know, I was like, wow. I was like, man, I'm just talking jazz about it. Like, I'm just talking, you know, just blowing steam. And then when she said, yeah, like, at 7.5 months, like, I attempted, I was like, wow, maybe she knows. And like to see her in action at a year and a half, like she was lit up, man. She was glowing. She had light in her eyes. So I was like, wow, maybe she knows where I'm coming from, or maybe she even had it worse if she attempted it, because I'm just like blowing steam about it. I don't know. And that's the type of stuff that I was able to, that saved my life. That's the type of stuff you people saved my life. Like, that's with you sharing little things about yourself. That's how, you know, like, I couldn't do it alone. And that put me on the same playing field. And, you know, like, so I come in, these guys, they said, look, the first time they started, you know, talking, they say, Joe, what's going on? And I opened my mouth. They said, whoa. They said, hold on, buddy. They said, you don't, you know, we don't want what you got, okay? So, like, and this isn't the bars, this isn't the streets. So in order for you to, like, for us to talk, you need to grow up a little bit, and you need to show us that you could mature into like, mature conversation. And so they didn't have a problem with that. It's just those things. There was, like, no negotiating. Like, when they were, like, you know, there is, like, if my sponsor or people in the meetings, you know, they saw something they needed to tell me, you know, it was either like, you know, I didn't have the liberty to negotiate my plans with them, you know, like, what was that? Like, I wasn't in that state where I could be like, yeah, you know, I got a better idea. It just was. So what happened was, you know, maybe about 11 months sober, I'm going to this meeting, the Friday meeting I always went to, and all of a sudden I had this excitement come into me about going to this AA meeting. I was 11 months sober, right? And I'm driving to this meeting that I've attended for the past 11 months, and all of a sudden I'm driving and I'm like, wow, like, I'm excited. Like, I can't wait to see Don. I can't wait to see John and get, I can't wait to get that plate. I'm going to get a plate tonight, you know, or whatever. And at that moment, AA, I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous because AA no longer was a chore. It became a joy. And that's when Alcoholics Anonymous and I arrived into this thing, is when it didn't seem like I got to go to a meeting. I got to do this. You know, it was like, no, I'm going to do it. I want to do it, and we're going to do it. And as a result, then that propels you into, okay, well, I'm going to be the secretary of a group now. I'm going to treasure. I'm going to do GSR. You get into all that GSR. You get commitments. And about a little over a year sober, I saw this flyer. It was for 2001. It was Detroit Icky Paw. And I'm like a year sober, and I'm like, okay, like, Detroit's not far from Cleveland. I'm going to grab some new guys who are willing and or who want to go. And, like, we're going to go up, and I'm going to drive up Saturday. We're going to go to this international convention of young people. And Detroit's a little two-hour and change from Cleveland, right? So it's not far. And so I do it. It's Saturday, and I go to this Detroit Icky Paw, which is the International Convention of Young People, and it blew my mind, right? Like, I was in registration, and all of a sudden somebody came running up who got sober with me and then moved to Columbus and then was there and, like, hey. And then, like, meet these people that are in Columbus that I'm going. And then, you know, and then I experienced Alcoholics Anonymous in a different sense with, you know, like, at a convention and with people all over the country, like, all over the world, you know. So, like, I'm meeting people sober from Arkansas to L.A. to everywhere, Canada. And it just opened up that we of the program, the wholeness, the power of the program with, you know, 6,000 people, younger people, like, you know, from 20 to 40, you know, just loving life, having a great time, weekend, all sober, all stone cold sober. So as a result, you know, from 01 to 2015, I went to a convention every year, at least one convention every year. I've been to 4 world conventions, and it's Alcoholics Anonymous at its best. Like, I don't know. Like, for me, I go to Toronto in 05 to the world convention, and I come and I met somebody out here, right? And then met people like, just, you just meet people, and then, like, these people come the year after. So then you're like, hey, what's up? Yeah, remember last year we were and it just was amazing. Like, where people would ask, hey, how was the World Convention? I said, if this is my last day on earth, I'm good. I think I've seen everything I needed to see to really, like, you know. But really, if you have the chance, do it. But what can I say, right? Like, my story is that of a kid who was lost, you know, as a kid probably, you know, and found a love affair with this effect produced by alcohol. And so, my disease alcoholism doesn't want me to play well with others. It wants me all for itself, right? And it was until I was able to break that cycle by coming in with you people and you being able to push me further and further and further away from that drink. So when I surround myself with you people, I'm like way far away from a drink. Like it's like it can't happen. And it keeps reminding me of where I come from, right? Like where I come, like I have never forgot that moment of hopelessness. I hope I never will. And I think by coming here regularly, it reminds me of that, you know, because I don't want to forget that. Like, my life has become so much better. Like, 25 years sober, have an amazing life with people in my life I want to ride with for the rest of my life, and it just evolves even on top of that, right? Like you know the more it's a gift that keeps on giving, ironically. You know, I just had to show up, do the work, surrender. I had to surrender. Whatever old ideas, you know, like they say, step three, right? Made a decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God as we understood them. And so, like, I'm contemplating that. What does that mean? Blah, blah, blah. Always these questions. And I'm driving. I'm like, you know what, Joe? If you got a thought and if you do the opposite, it's probably God's will. And that's how I went on it for a while, right? Like, you know, there's nothing impressive, you know, as far as like I still owe big. Like just because I'm sober 25 years and this, like, doesn't, you know, like, there's people maybe somewhere out there that with the thought of my name or the sound of my name is like, ugh, like, I need to owe that food, you know what I mean? And that's to this day, right? So I have to just remind myself that it's important for me to still contribute, to give, and to be a part, you know, and to do what I can. Like, if I can, I will. And that's kind of, you know, I arrive in each moment, and I'll give you the best I got. There's a whole lot that's happened with prayer, meditation, you know, and my relationship with my higher power, you know, which is personal to me, you know. And it's my relationship with my higher power. You know, I could say that I have one, you know, that I could do business with. I heard somebody say that, and I like that. But, you know, so I owe big, and I'm grateful for y'all to be here to listen. And I'm good. I don't necessarily need another 10 minutes. I think it'd just be blowing hot air, but... Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you all sitting patiently, kindly, and participating in this day of sobriety with me.
Yeah, so I'll close.
All right, let's thank Joe for leading a great meeting tonight. Great speak.